This episode is sponsored by Coconu. Coconu is for sexy time. It is lube, but guess what? It's organic. Coconu facilitates, affirms, and celebrates good, clean, healthy sex, all with the promise of naturally safe products developed by people who are obsessed with quality. They are dedicated to helping couples increase their capacity for connection, intimacy, and pleasure.
Coconu was founded to help couples lead healthier, happier lives by offering 100% safe and organic personal care products. I just got my Coconu oil-based lubricant in the mail, and I'm very excited. And I'm so great to have her. I'm so great.
I'm so great at sexy time, especially now that I have coconut-based oil lubricants for my sexy time. Everything will be slick, slap, and good old time wet.
And Coconu is free of alcohol, petroleum, parabens, glutens, phthalates, fragrances, and dyes. It's hypoallergenic, and it's 100% natural ingredients, meaning it's 100% edible. So perfect. That takes your sexy time to the next level. Our listeners will get 15% off of their Coconu products. In our show notes, there will be a link, and use the code BABES15 at checkout. Have a great sexy time, babes.
We're your hosts, Dana and Kara,
and this is From the Mouths of Babes.
Hey, babes, welcome back. We are excited to have you, and we're excited to have our guest, Tammy Hill, again today. We've had her on, it's probably been 2 years ago, probably was the last time. So we're so excited that you're back.
Thank you.
Yes. So as a reminder, I took a healthy sexuality class at BYU, and Tammy Hill was one of my professors when I took that class. And I've been following her on social media ever since, and she has fantastic resources for couples. And it's great. If you want to follow her on social media, we'll be sure to tag her in our post and in our show notes. But to give her official introduction, Tammy Hill is passionate about strengthening marriage relationships. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist and an active member of the American Association of Sexual Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. Tammy has enjoyed being an adjunct faculty member at Brigham Young University in the School of Family Life, where she taught hundreds of students each semester in marriage preparation, marriage enhancement, and healthy sexuality in marriage courses. Tammy owns a private counseling practice where she largely works with couples. She has free resources available on her website. It's tammyhill.com. And again, we'll be sure to link that, where she also offers numerous making love retreats, honeymoon workshops, and dating boot camps each year. Published in 2021, Tammy's first book, God Made Girls and Boys, is a beautiful children's book addressing agency, gender, accountability, and hope in our heavenly parents' eternal plan. Her second book, Replenish, Creating Sexual Fulfillment in Marriage, was published in January of 2023. Most importantly, Tammy is forever grateful to be a wife, mother, and grandmother.
Yep.
There's I love it. Well, we're so glad to have you back, and I'm really excited for our topic today. So one of the posts that I saw Tammy make, and again, this may have been a while ago, but she referenced something about sexual wisdom. And I thought, I've never heard that term before. And so I was like, I think that would be a great discussion to have about what is sexual wisdom and virtue. So interestingly enough, when I took Tammy's healthy sexuality class several years ago, this was probably, I've been married 7 years. And I took that class when I was engaged to my husband, Luke. But I remember thinking of the question of, virtue within the context of being single and dating. I was always very much aware of what virtue was, having virtuous thoughts, living a very chaste life, which for those who are in, you know, a religious community, that means, you know, waiting until marriage to have sex. I remember thinking to myself in one of our lectures of, well, what does virtue look like as a married woman? And that was a question that has stuck with me throughout my marriage. And in general, what is virtue? So today we are going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about virtue, what that looks like as a married spouse, and sexual wisdom. So to get started, Tammy talks about divine sexuality, which I would love as the baseline for Tammy to give us an idea of what that is.
For me, divine sexuality is talking about we believe that we are created in the image and function of heavenly parents. And so we look like and work like they do. And we, their sexuality and have sexual and body parts, and we have sexual body parts, and we have to look at them as being holy and good in all ways. And we're trying to become more like them here on earth. And I believe it's really important to accept that part of ourselves and not be afraid of it or feel ashamed of the feelings that we might have that are sexual. And so a lot of that comes just from an eternal perspective of our progression and recognizing that it's a gift that has been given to us to be able to utilize and progress and have happiness and joy in this life. I also like to think of the idea that we are a body and a spirit creates a soul of man and woman. And so when you have two people coming together sexually, you've got two bodies and two spirits, two souls coming together to share and create this energy and this love together. And I love pondering the idea that the Savior has, you know, long before I was placed on this earth or born to this earth, he suffered already for my sins, and he suffered for each one of us. And he's also, I think that adds a divinity to what it is that we're doing, that when we're sexual, that we have already been atoned for. And so what we're sharing and doing and how we're utilizing this gift, I think we need to remember that it truly has already been atoned for. And that makes it that much more sacred to me, that it's something you don't want to mock the possibilities that your bodies can share together and or mock the atonement in any way. I believe there's a lot of holiness. And when I say that, that doesn't mean that sex is reverent or that it is always holy. It definitely needs to be playful and, you know, passionate and erotic and expansive as well. But often in our world, all we see is the pleasure aspects of sexuality and maybe some of the dysfunction that people experience sexually. I don't think we take a minute to pause and recognize the eternal significance of the possibilities that we have when we share ourselves sexually in marriage.
It's really interesting, some of the words that you just said that I haven't paired together with sexuality is function, right? You talk about how we were created in the image and function of our heavenly parents. I think a lot of the times we only think of like image, but the actual, like how our body works was created. The function behind our bodies was created by our heavenly parents and is a something that they possess as well. The other thing that I thought was really interesting is progression. And I think most of us who have had sexual sex within our relation, our marriage relationship, we see progress. We see progression, mm-hmm. Even from like, you know, telling funny stories of like the first time you ever had sex to now and how drastically different that can be. But I thought, wow, yeah, that's so true. Not only can we see the progression within our marriages, but we also just see progression of Godhood. And I think that's a really beautiful thing of the ability to create life. One thing that I've never thought about. I think sometimes there's this juxtaposition of talking about sex and talking about Jesus that a lot of things, it doesn't quite match up.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was really fascinating too. I will say one of the questions that got brought up in my mind then is when you say like sex has already been atoned for, that could come across as something like negative, right? And for people who might already have a lot of shame around their sexuality and sex, how do we differentiate between this idea that sex is good and divine, as you say, but also that idea that it's already been atoned for?
So the atone that I want to clarify, sex isn't what's been atoned for. We are what have been atoned for. And when we come together sexually, there's a possibility that we create a new life. That new life has already been atoned for long before it's created. And so I think there's a reverence there to remember that not to mock the significance of the Savior's atonement for us in the way we choose to use our bodies sexually.
Okay. That completely makes sense.
I think I know a lot of people who have divorced and then they're dating again. I know that is a really hard discussion of like, well, I can just repent later because sexuality within my first marriage was so traumatic or it was used as a weapon. And now I need this new person to like prove to me, you know? So I think that it can be easier to mock and be like, well, I can just tell my bishop later, it's fine. Like, but the reality, it is very powerful. It is, and it's scary sometimes. We don't know so much what the negative aspects of being using that power irresponsibly can be, you know, and how it can change your spirit, I think, or affect you long term.
Totally affect you long term, especially when you have had a solid understanding and you have solid security kind of in being attachment, that you feel it securely attached. And when you share yourself sexually and you're sharing continually with different people, it causes fragmentation. It isn't helpful for you emotionally, mentally. It negatively impacts your ability to feel secure in who you are. And it, with the religious component, it is in many ways the act you've been atoned for, our sins have been atoned for, and to intentionally do things that we know we really shouldn't with the idea that, oh, we'll take care of this later. That really is, to me, making fun of something that is so sacred and treating it flippantly. It's almost, I don't mean this in a crass or crude way, but to me, it almost is like you're flipping off the Savior, like, hey, I'm going to do this and I'll get back at it later. I'll take care of this later. But for right now, that's how I feel.
Yeah. You got to work on that relationship with Jesus first, probably before you make some of those big, big physical decisions with a new partner, maybe, or maybe even within your marriage sometimes, depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's interesting is when I self-reflect, I think my relationship with Jesus and how I view him, how I utilize his atonement, access his grace, directly reflects how I feel about myself and influences my sexuality. They're absolutely connected. I think a lot of people probably wouldn't make that direct connection, but I think when we understand who we are, our identity as children of God, it absolutely affects how we show up in our lives, how we're going to show up sexually in our marriages.
In every way, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that for a lot of women specifically, I know for me personally, I've gone through different phases as a single woman, as, you know, a newly married woman, now as a mother, in embracing my sexuality. And there's been ebbs and flows within that. I feel like I started off being very passionate about my sexuality, understanding that it was good, that it was divine. But I also was a little naive of what that would entail, right? Because I had never had sex before. And then, you know, I get into my marriage, it's new, it's exciting, it's great. But there's also this learning curve. There's also maybe unmet expectations. And, or, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't realize that maybe I didn't like it as much, or I didn't want it as much, right? There's so many different aspects to female sexuality. But with that said, along the way, I think we as women, we want to be able to embrace our sexuality without feeling shame.
Mm-hmm.
And to be comfortable with it. But I do think that there are different phases of that. So I would love to talk about ways that women can embrace their sexuality without feeling like they're entering into like an uncomfortable position or that's shame-based.
Well, yeah, I think that sexual development and embracing your sexuality in my mind are the same thing. When we talk about embracing our sexuality, it's getting, it's a whole, looking at ourselves as whole, integrating all parts of ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's living with integrity, meaning that we're not going to push part of who we naturally are away. Maybe we, you know, a lot of people are afraid of this part of themselves. They've had a childhood that's been built around a lot of fear or shame with sexuality. Sure. And so that it is on the peripheral. It's not really integrated into who they are and into what they share or experience. And so when we talk about sexual maturity, sexual development, I think it's accepting that this is part of us. That like every part of us, we're going to have experiences sometimes that are uncomfortable. And I hope you'll lean into things that might feel uncomfortable. You know, I'm not talking about things that are perverse or antisocial, but making sure that you are still stretching and growing in your sexual relationship. If it's the same all the time, no one's going to be excited or interested in that. So integrating new things and talking with your spouse and deciding what types of things you might want to share, how you might want to feel pleasure in unique or different ways. And then every time you do something initially for the first time, heck, I remember the first time I French kissed. I thought, this is gross. No, thank you. And you know, I'm so glad I tried it again and tried it again. So it's not like you just stop if you're uncomfortable. That's not progression sexually or in any way. How many of us are comfortable giving a talk or driving for the first time or whatever it is we do? We have to lean into things that are uncomfortable in order to grow. And so I think there isn't a way to really develop sexually and not be uncomfortable sometimes.
I definitely agree. I hear like the wisdom aspect is communicating and like being honest and open and being, open to your partner, open to change is kind of what I feel like you're saying.
To be open to the idea that pleasure, we're designed for pleasure. Mm-hmm. We have a clitoral complex for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is for our pleasure. That should send a loud and clear message to people that our heavenly parents value sexual pleasure for their daughters, right? And so understanding that the body, sex, pleasure are essential gifts of progress and joy, and not strict and non-dimensional kind of around your sexuality, that you're not really letting yourself expand, or you're not really letting yourself receive the joy that you might be able to receive or give in your marriage relationship with pleasure. Don't be pleasure denying. Often I think people think our theology is that righteousness is this side of sex. And I think it's part that righteousness is part of sex. Our theology is very beautiful and incorporates sexuality as some of the most beautiful doctrine that we have for the gospel. At least that's what I believe.
Okay, there's so much from what you just said that I want to unpack, and so hopefully I'll remember all the different things. But so I think we've touched on a little bit about sexual wisdom and how wisdom entails sexual creativity. Is there a difference between sexual wisdom and sexual creativity, or do they go hand in hand?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think that sexual wisdom, first of all, includes the idea of if you don't feel safe in your relationship, you absolutely should not be sharing yourself in a way that feels unsafe, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've got sound judgment, and we need to be wise around that sexual wisdom. We need to make sure that we're using our sexuality in pro-social ways that are congruent with who we want to be and aligned with our covenants and aligned with our values. I think we need to challenge stigmas. Like maybe your young women's leader talked about this, or maybe your mother said this, and maybe these are little messages that people might have. And they think because it was from their mother or maybe from a young one or a bishop that it must be true for them. And mm-hmm. that I think challenge that. You need to decide what's true for you, not what's true to everyone that's talked to you about sex. Find out what you really believe and what your ability is to test and see what feels congruent for you in your relationship. And I think wisdom also includes the ability to get your head around what you're experiencing enough to surrender to pleasure. A lot of times that's, if a woman can stop, you know, our brain, we've talked about this many times, is our biggest sex organ. And if we are so in our heads about what's right or what's wrong, and that it, all this, the fear or worry, we're never going to receive, we're never going to be able to really fully orgasm and receive pleasure. It's impossible. And so I think there's wisdom in believing what you're doing is good so that you can surrender to the pleasure you were created to experience. I think that's part of sexual wisdom. When I talk about sexual creativity, I think that's expansion, like I've talked about, maybe some novelty. And also that creativity has to include the being known piece, because it's so vulnerable when you are so I love to role play. I know I'm not going to divulge things. I hope that people feel uncomfortable with that. Role playing is so fun. Meeting my husband at the door like a little French maid or something, you know, just have this whole new story going on for a little bit. To me, that is so fun. And yet it's also incredibly vulnerable, because sure. A part of this playfulness piece of me is now out and being exposed. And my husband's maybe seeing this part that he's never seen before. And I need to have the creativity and ability to let that sit there and to let that peace be there so that we can really see each other in this intimacy. And so creativity forces us to be seen by one another. And if you break down, I remember Laura Brotherson, I don't know if she's the one that said it first, but she said it once and it hit me, that intimacy, if you break it up, it's like in to me see. Like, and I love the idea of that when we truly are seeing into each other, we're seeing the playful side. We're seeing little parts of our souls that no one else sees. No one else sees, except for in the sacred context of this relationship.
Yeah, I think that's such a good reminder and good advice, especially when you're first entering, like that letting go and getting out of your head and just that self, you know, the self-esteem part of it, you know, can be really hard when you're first married. Oh. And I mean, it is sometimes, you know, after babies, there's certain times that I'm sure those kind of things come back, and the getting in your head and like, well, I've got stuff to do, and, you know, being able to check out of the rest of your life and tune in to your partner and let them tune into you. I think that's probably the hardest part for women, I think.
Absolutely. I think so too. And the busier you get, the more children and responsibilities you have, the more difficult it is to create space and time for that to happen. Yet I think it's so essential. Couples who are having, I firmly believe this, and the research backs it up, that couples who are having wonderful sex, who are connected sexually, it doesn't necessarily mean frequency of sex, but it means that the sex they're having is really connecting and really filled with a lot of pleasure for both partners. And those couples bring a great energy into their homes. They are modeling a much happier relationship for their children, who then look at marriage as something that they might want to do in the future because they see mom and dad feeling happy and in love with each other. I just think there's generationally, sex can make a difference. As good sex can make a difference.
I love that example. You were probably thinking of the same thing. Our parents were pretty touchy. And so they'd always be like making out in the kitchen. And as kids would be like, no kissing in the kitchen, gross. And now, like, I told my kids that. And so now they say that to us all the time. Ew, gross, no kissing in the kitchen. And it's like, oh, it's the best place to kiss, you know, is what our parents said and what we say. And I think if I could do anything right for my kids, hopefully, it's just like, yeah, modeling intimacy and emotional connection, you know, and you know, obviously not letting our kids walk in on us, but showing it in the kitchen as appropriate.
Right. Or, and having them see you be physically affectionate with each other, I think is wonderful. And, but also it's the, when you're really having that energy, it goes a long ways outside of the bedroom too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of forgiveness and, oh, looking for the good in each other rather than giving each other the benefit of the doubt. You know, those all are all coincide with good sex.
So true. And backpacking off of what Kara said, and with something that you said, Tammy, of generationally how it affects people and families. Our parents last year celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and we were all together at a resort in Mexico, and we had a little dinner and a night where we talked about, you know, our parents' marriage and the highlights of that. But I remember my mom was getting up and she was giving advice, like advice that she would give. And they have over, I think they're coming on like 34 grandkids. Mm-hmm. And so we were asking them for like, what advice would you give, you know, your grandkids for marriage? And my mom said, like, I can't remember what it was exactly, but she's like, I really like kissing. And, you know, I'm really attracted to your grandpa. And that's really important. And I think all of us were a little bit like, oh boy, like, Grammy, you're saying too much. But I also think, wow, what a beautiful example and thing to say to your grandkids to encourage them to embrace their sexuality and this beautiful part of marriage. And, I do think that it has positively impacted our family and will impact generations to come.
Yes. How fortunate for your children to have had that example and you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate it. One thing that I'd love to transition to, you were talking about basically using your wisdom socially, and that really brought up a whole bunch of images flashing in my head of like Facebook groups. There's like LDS sexuality Facebook groups where people they give really broad advice or really explicit advice, like things that I'm like, I don't really think that aligns with what I think to be eternally true or safe or, you know, virtuous, lovely, of good report or praiseworthy. Like, and so I've had to like leave some of those groups because I'm like, whoa, that is, I am not on board with that game. And I think that as we're in this new era of sharing, I definitely think we overshare. And how, that I think that there's this pendulum of swinging too far. Mm-hmm. And
well, let me, I want to add to that. I just think like, in this age, as Kara is talking about, where there's a lot of influence, right? Do we think that influence, specifically as it pertains to healthy sexuality, do we think that the pendulum can swing too far, that maybe our own personal sexual wisdom should not be shared? And I think there's this fine line, right? Because I think even within this conversation, a lot of people could take the stance of like, well, I don't need you telling me about what I should and shouldn't be doing, right? And that's, I don't think anyone should do that. But when people are seeking out more wisdom or to try to create more sexual creativity in their marriage, I think that there can be times when I have this fear of like, oh, this person's doing that. Does that mean I should be doing that? So is this normal, I think, to create this pressure for people to feel more experimental than they otherwise might not feel comfortable with? Or as you mentioned earlier, you know, things should make us uncomfortable. And just because you're uncomfortable doesn't mean that it's necessarily bad, but what's the line?
Well, I kind of am hearing two separate kind of questions. I'm hearing, where's the line for a person to know if they should seek out information to expand themselves, and where that is versus what's the boundary that I need to have around my relationship?
Yeah.
And so I really, and you know this, Dana, I really, in my teaching, I emphasize that what goes on in your bedroom needs to really be your business. It's a sacred space. And if you need to get help, then you and your spouse should go together to get help. It shouldn't be one person talking to people and coming home and you know, and letting people know what, or letting your spouse know what you want to try or things like that. There has to be more. I think we have gone way too far. Not long ago, I was at the gym. Two people that started running on the treadmill that I was running next to, I don't think they had ever seen each other because they came from different places. And before I know it, they're just sitting there talking about their favorite sexual positions. And it's like, holy cow, this is just blowing my mind. I think we've gone way too far that anything goes, and that's not true. That's not right. It shouldn't go. That is sacred space. And yet, if you are wanting to understand how to expand or push that creativity, and you're not exactly sure how to do that, I think that we have wonderful resources that people can reach out to get ideas that are safe. I think this, you know, talking about this on your podcast, I really admire the work of Jennifer Finlayson Fife. I think people can read my book. I think that there's a lot of like Anthony Hughes from Covenant Therapy. There are a lot of people out there that are putting great information who are sex therapists. They've got the education behind them to help our particular population within our religious context find information on how to know what they can try, to know, give you ideas of what might be something you could enjoy or how you could enjoy it. I know that I do Making Love retreats often, and they're very private and we're not sharing information, but I'm teaching principles. I'm teaching physiology, particularly female physiology. In the last 2 years, we have learned so much about, we've learned in the last 2 years that women have a prostate gland and that it has sexual functioning. I mean, we are on the cusp of continually learning more about female sexuality because it wasn't studied really until about 1980. And so we just have, it's so exciting. That's information I think that everyone should have a right and to understand and to know how to help your wife or how to help you feel more pleasure if you're not feeling a lot of pleasure in what it is you are doing, you know. So there are resources out there for you to find good information, and I would be searching out and following them or reading or listening to different podcasts. I know my Live Your Why podcast is all about sex now within mm-hmm. In this last season. It's all about sexual relationships, and And I just think that there's a lot that is out there that maybe people aren't aware where to find it.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate your like Instagram posts because they're just like a little taste and they're like, oh, let me think about this. Have I thought deeply about this specific thing or, you know, and that's a very non-intimidating way to get started. And mm-hmm. then I can go to your podcast and dig deeper into this topic. I don't have to do a broad, scary Google
search. Exactly. Nor I hope that you're all of everyone listening is wise enough to know you're really that isn't wise to go there and to just do a broad search.
Yeah, I think that can open doors. You know, I think the latest statistic is that 33% of women use pornography mm-hmm. Habitually. And so, and more therapists are getting women that feel like they have a compulsion they can't control. And so even for women, if we're like, oh, I'm not going to visually get myself into a situation that I'm not safe in with the internet, I think that it can easily become that. And we don't need to get cocky with ourselves, I think.
Right. Feel like it's nothing's going to happen to you.
Well, and I think wisdom, I think what we perceive as wisdom can be skewed when we go searching for it, right? Mm-hmm. Through like pornography or things like that, because it's just not realistic, right? Mm-hmm. But one thing that I thought was really interesting as I'm trying to like piece together our conversation is that a common thread that I see within talking about sexuality, talking about just living in general, living your faith, is this idea of being a steward of yourself and recognizing your own ability to discern and to make decisions for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think culturally within, you know, Christian communities, we want people to kind of outline for us what's righteous and versus what's not. And I think we unfortunately put the responsibility on other people to decide that for ourselves. And so I think what sexual wisdom is understanding that, no, I am responsible for myself, for my body, for my pleasure. And I'm going to decide what that boundary is for myself of what is righteous versus what isn't. And I kind of have a hard time with that word righteous in general, but I think just we have the tools to figure out what works for us. And I think in the past, maybe we would have perceived that as like, oh, you're just kind of picking and choosing what works for you. But I do think that that is part of the plan, right? That we're figuring out how we align with our covenants, how we live our covenants, and how we embrace and progress our sexuality. And what that will look like to us individually.
Mm-hmm. And I will just add to that, that over the time of your life, that can really change.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you start out in marriage and you think, that's not going to be for me, you know, 25 years down the road, that can be your most favorite thing that you finally have relaxed and explored and realized, oh, I actually really do enjoy this. And so I think that we've got is not only that we're getting discernment for what's best for us and as a couple, what's best for us, but that we're also knowing that it doesn't have to, it's not like it's always going to be exactly that way, that there will be things that, like I said, with French kissing, that I'm, you know, you get, you experience things and realize, oh, I do actually kind of like that.
Yeah. It's not linear, right? We
totally.
I think that, segues perfectly into talking about, you know, virtue and chastity, because that's something that I've thought a lot about of what does virtue and living the law of chastity, what does that look like as a married woman? For people who have made promises with God, one of a big promise is the law of chastity, which is that, you know, you only have sexual relations with a husband or a wife who you are legally and lawfully wedded to. But so much as a youth, I remember thinking like, oh, the law of chastity, virtue means I have to keep my thoughts clean. I have to keep them chaste. But now as a married woman, it's like, oh no, I should think about my husband. Right. I feel like that actually helps me to,
100%.
Fulfill my covenants. Right. So I just want to talk about that, about virtue and the law of chastity, and what that looks like as a married woman. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and then I would love to share some of my thoughts.
Okay. So I think, I mentioned a little bit before that sometimes we have a hard time integrating righteousness or faithfulness and sex, that somehow we have to deny sex in order to be this, you know, stalwart woman or man, and they really do come together. And to me, virtue has always been a little bit of a tricky word, because if we say we're virtuous as young women, we're implying that we're not being sexually active, or we're waiting to hold to share that with our spouses. And in that same breath, it's saying that sex is not virtuous, right? Mm-hmm. And that that doesn't jive, because I think, to me, what I've taught my children, what I've taught, and what I've come to understand for myself, is that virtue is having really a high moral standards, and being morally good and being honest, not cheating. If you go to work and you're there for 5 hours, you work for the full 5 hours. You're not on your phone for 3 hours and working for two. I mean, that as far as sexuality is that, we choose to wait to share ourselves fully sexually until we're married. But there's going to be times that you have sexual arousal and desire, and it's okay. You're still virtuous. That happens sometimes just because of your physiology, because you've got a body, and not to get all in a panic if things like that happen. And as far as being virtuous, when you are sexually active, for me, that means that you're putting all of your sexual, romantic, flirty energy to your partner that you're committed to. And one of the things that we've created with, we've been designed sexually for a reason. One of them is to bond in marriage, and the other is to, you know, have children and to have the continuation of the species. And so one thing that a lot of people don't know is that there are 8 receptors in the brain that only ignite right before, during, and right after orgasm. That's the only time they ever ignite in the brain. And what they do is that they slow down. It's like putting a movie in slow motion almost. They slow down what visually you're seeing, what all of your senses, what it is you're hearing. It slows the experience down in your mind, of what you're actually experiencing in those really pleasurable moments. I think that's designed for a reason. Our Heavenly Parents want us to remember this goodness. They want us to have it in slow motion so we can maybe go back and reflect on that again. I think there's a reason behind that is divine. And I think, like you were saying, thinking about your spouse and things that you share helps you get in the mood for sharing it again, right? And so being a virtuous married woman is all of this energy goes towards this one person. And it's okay to go ahead and share, be thinking about them, be reflecting on the things that you've shared sexually that brought you a lot of joy. I think it's okay to create little sexual role plays or fantasies that you might have fun doing together. I believe we're designed specifically to be able to do that because of these brain receptors that we have.
That's so fascinating. I think what I thought of was that, you know, because those things only ignite, they force you to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what a beautiful gift that our Heavenly Parents have given us, that in this exact moment when you are connected with your partner, when your souls are connected, to slow down.
That just gave me chills the way you said it. That's exactly how I think too.
Yeah.
That's exactly where you're supposed to be, and it has power. Yeah.
And his intention is that it's not just by chance that we're created this way. There's intention behind it. And one thing I love pondering is, what are all the, because of how we function sexually and the different things physiologically we're designed to experience, there's purpose in it. And to be able to ponder and put the purpose behind it with what I believe eternally is significant, I think is some of my favorite things to think about.
Yeah. I love those thoughts. Some other things that I was thinking about as it pertains to virtue. There's a scripture that talks about, you know, let virtue garnish thy thoughts unceasingly, and then shall thy confidence wax strong in the presence of God. And I think when I heard that all the time, I thought, okay, really interesting. You know, we want to have clean thoughts. But now as a married adult woman, the way that I have viewed that is, you know, let virtue garnish thy thoughts. And I think what virtue is recognizing our identity and not allowing the adversary to put doubt in our minds of who we are, the divinity behind our sexuality, the tendency to second guess ourselves. I think letting virtue garnish our thoughts is allowing ourselves to be who we are. And then what a beautiful promise it says within that scripture, that when we show up authentically, when we let our mind have power, then we confidently can show up before God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such beautiful imagery, that our sexuality, our virtue allows us to stand confidently before God. And that we, you know, another gift is having the gift of the Holy Ghost, right? That we can discern even further how to continue our progression to become like our heavenly parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's the power that virtue has in our lives, I think, is underrepresented. We don't tap into that power as much as I think we could.
Now, I've never thought of it that way, and I love it. So virtue, in a lot of ways, you're saying virtue is our sexuality, right? Kind of putting those side by side a little bit, our cleanliness and our sexual cleanliness and purity, right? But you're also adding to that it includes our identity. There's a sexual identity that we have that is a beautiful part of who we are. And if we're holding on to that and owning that, we can show up with confidence with who we, the way you said it was so beautiful. I love that idea.
Thank
I'll have to think about that some more.
Yeah. And I think that's the power of our mind, right? When we can understand who we are,
mm-hmm.
of course it's going to help us to show up more confidently. And I think that's absolutely true within our sexuality. If we embrace our sexuality, then we confidently show up mm-hmm. in our marriages mm-hmm. and we can be more sexually creative. We can expand our wisdom. So I think all of these things go hand in hand. Our virtue.
Building blocks.
Right. Our virtue, our promise to have sex. Right. I think that's what the law of chastity is. When we've made covenants, is we're saying, I'm committing and covenanting that I'm going to have sex with my spouse, that I'm going to see and be seen, that I'm going to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. and I'm going to embrace this power that God has given me. And not just because of procreating, right? But because it is absolutely divine. And there's purpose in me having pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And when I allow my mind to align with those beliefs, again, we show up confidently. We embrace sexual wisdom. We embrace sexual creativity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just love that. I'm working on my second children's book right now. It's called Your Body and the Plan of Happiness.
Mm.
And I think a lot of it is around understanding what your sexual identity is. And I've never tied that with virtue before. So I want to study that in, because the way that you described it, it totally felt true, like what you were saying.
Thank you. Well, this has been a great conversation. I have really enjoyed it. It's something that I'm very passionate about. So I'm always glad to have conversations with people who are equally passionate about sexuality. All right. Well, let's transition to our favorite part of the episode, when we get to tell funny stories that came from the mouth of our babes. Mm-hmm. Kara, do you have a story?
Yes. So I'm going to say one that came out of my main babe, my main squeeze. My husband can sleepwalk and sleep talk. And throughout the years, it's gotten a little better. Last night, I was just about to fall asleep, and he's like grabbing me and talking to me. And I was like, babe, lay down, go back to sleep, lay down. And he goes right in my face, I'm trying to help you. I'm helping you. And I said, no, you're not. You're waking me up. Lay back down. And I cracked myself up. I was a little grumpy last night, but I'm trying to help you. So that came out of the mouth of my babe in the middle of the night.
That's always fun to get something in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Probably what you were expecting, but.
No, that's an adventure in my marriage. When we were like really like soon after we were married, he was like punching me in the night, like laughing, like he was like fighting his brother, like like dead arm, like, and so I had to like clothesline him and like slam him down, like of course, poor guy just doesn't remember at all. Yeah, it's good times, adventures.
That's funny. That's
Tammy, funny. Do you have any stories that came from that?
I have so many kids and a lot of life that we've lived together, and they've said so many sweet things. The first thing that came to my mind, my oldest son was little. I remember him asking me to make him a peanut butter sandwich. He had a hard time realizing peanut and penis were kind of interchangeable. Sometimes it was kind of awkward.
Oh, that's so funny.
We have some nieces and nephews that have always referred to the penis as a peanut. And and it just makes me laugh that the other way around, a penis, butter, and jelly. Oh, classic kid.
Okay, I have to tell a really funny story that happened recently. Just for some context, I live across the street from my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, my husband's brother. They have four boys. I have two girls, and they have a five-year-old boy, and I have a four-year-old little girl. And they were outside playing, and my sister-in-law was near them as they were playing. And Sawyer was kind of in her own world, talking about like princesses and, you know, prince and the princess, and her little boy is like, I don't really like girl stuff anymore. And she's like, okay, you know. And then he goes, but sometimes when I see a picture, my penis goes up when I see girls in their bathing suits. And my sister-in-law is just kind of standing there like, okay. And he's like totally saying this in front of Sawyer, but I think Sawyer was just kind of in her own little world and didn't even pay any attention. But we were just cracking up and laughing, and also just talking about, oh my gosh, he's only five. And he's already like, the fact that he can make that connection of like, oh, when I see a girl in a swimsuit, my penis goes up, you know, was just so funny.
So funny.
But also we're not surprised, because I guess his dad was very much girl crazy from a very young age. And so it's just funny to see how those genes come right through to your kids.
Well, and male infants at about 20 months, it's really their brains are marinating in testosterone from about 20 months till around age 36.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating?
How are they supposed to function if they're just swimming in testosterone?
Well, that's just from the male brain. It's a new kind of newer research, and they say it's like that's marinating, and that's That just talks some more about how we've got to realize that this visual connection that men have to women, round, curvy parts, especially a lot of it's just so biological. It's not something they're choosing.
Yeah.
Drawn to.
So interesting. My youngest, her name is Stevie, and around Halloween, you know, the girls would get to pick out a piece of candy every night. And my husband, Luke, would start playing the, like, I want candy, like, song to, like, let them know, like, okay, it's time for candy. And so at random times during the day, like when I'm driving the car or at night, Stevie, every night she'll start singing, I want candy. Dun, 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 dun. I want candy. She's a funny one.
He is funny. She's lately started calling me Auntie Carrot, and it's my favorite thing in my entire life right now.
Cute.
Yeah. Having her FaceTime me. Auntie Carrot, what are you doing? What are you doing?
What are you Auntie doing, Carrot? Auntie Carrot?
Yeah. I know. I love it.
That's so fun. Well, thank you, ladies. It's fun to be with you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. We love this. We will add where people can connect with you in our show notes. But as always, Tammy, thanks for joining us.